Hi guys, welcome back to Mommy Jojo Uncut Mojo Injection, episode 31. I'm delighted to have my friend Ruth McAuliffe here today. She's an amazing counsellor, she works for Rape Crisis, she's a psychotherapist, and she also happens to have my middle name, so Jojo Ruth. I think there's something in that, and I really enjoy working with Ruth. I've already had her on the podcast with Barry. They are together at Get Honed, beautiful Instagram page, going to do amazing things. Honing in. And it's amazing to have Ruth back and hopefully get Barry back in again soon, because he's got great banter and I want to hear him have more singing. We're covering a very important topic today, which is online bullying, grooming online, keeping your kids safe online, why people are bullies. So interesting. Ruth, like myself, is a total geek, living and breathing all of the latest mental health research, because we do know that the NHS are 17 years behind in terms of their research. So we need more people like us completely drowning, immersing ourselves in this this knowledge, collaborating together to bring you as much advice as possible and as much evidence. So really, really interesting chat in terms of positive psychology and what we can be doing to look after our kids and look after our own mental health. So I'm delighted to welcome Ruth today, and welcome back everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. 31 episodes in already. Thank you so much to everyone that's hit the stars. It helps so much for spreading the awareness of our little podcast in Edinburgh, which is just growing and growing. Let's take it global, guys. Please keep tuning in. If there's any topic request, hook me up. If you're desperate to come on, you're passionate about something and knowledgeable, drop me a message. And let's gear up to an amazing Christmas. Lots of love. Mwah. I want to film it all and I want to have it recorded. And it's like, to me it's such a treat being able to have this time, because it's like therapy. Aww. And then thousands of people get to tune in.
That's awesome.
You get to give out like mojo injections
to everybody. There's so many of yours that I've listened to and went, oh yeah. No, totally. There's so many recently I've sat and gone, yes, yeah. The PT one was so good.
Oh.
That was way back. That was like, yes.
He was brilliant.
So good. And we sat, and I actually sent that one to Barry, because I was like, there were so many things in that. I was like, that's what we think. And he was like, that is what we think.
We should do that. That was awesome. Because Michael's going to be doing some work at the Edinburgh Wellbeing Festival.
Oh my God, that's coming back around again. Has that been a year?
So fast. Right,
yeah, no, has that been a year?
I know.
How did that happen?
Bonkers.
I feel like I went to that yesterday.
It's absolutely insane.
God.
So I'll have to introduce you guys. I think Barry and Michael would get on.
They would get on really well.
And he was amazing. They were both incredible in different ways with the podcast, and they're both really good singers. I'd like to.
Oh yeah.
A duet.
Oh my God, I love it.
But anyway, okay, so just to the background.
Yes.
Your name is Ruth.
My name is Ruth.
I'm Jojo.
You're Jojo.
Ruth. But my middle name is Ruth.
It's Ruth, which I only recently discovered this when you told me.
Yeah, because when I was
didn't know that.
I really need a good counsellor and psychotherapist.
Yes.
That's the one. Psychotherapist, psychologist.
Oh, there's so many.
So many. But basically, you're trained to the brim with all the stuff. You're an absolute geek.
I am a geek. Like I told you, I was breastfeeding at night, 10 o'clock, doing a bit of research, reading some case studies, doing a bit of research.
That's what I love. Like a normal person. This is what I love. And, you know, that's what we're all about. And the fact that your name's Ruth, I think I believe in signs, baby.
It is a sign.
Just round.
Yeah, like I live around, live close.
So.
We may or may not be neighbours.
Yeah. So.
Dun, 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 dun. It's a sign.
It's getting hot.
All joking aside, it's getting quite warm. I'm going to take my scarf off.
Yeah. So, what I wanted to talk to you about was, I get messages constantly, and I have to be really careful what I say, because most of the messages I get are in confidence.
Yeah.
So I had one this morning saying, there's a mum at my school who's a complete bully.
Mm.
So it was a mum, it wasn't a child.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my days, they say, can you help me?
Yeah.
Well, I'll do my bit with the content, absolutely. I get messages all the time about bullying in the workplace, or if kids are excluded, or just so many messages.
So many.
Online, and I've had loads of questions about today, and people talking about the safety of their kids and grooming, and
yep.
You know, what happens to someone if they're caught grooming a child,
and adults, I don't really know where we should start because
oh my god, there's so much. I mean for obviously for background, for me, one of my jobs is that I work at Edinburgh Rape Crisis, so I'm a counsellor there. I work with children and young people between 12 to 18.
Wow.
I have worked younger, but that is my current age group. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of grooming. We see a lot of online grooming, we'll see a lot of in-person grooming. There's lots of different things there, but also I've worked with adults for a long time as well, and the prevalence of the conversation of bullying coming into context in counselling is massive for adults. It's huge. And it's never something you're specifically trained on when you become a counsellor. It's not something you sit down and go, let's talk about bullying. And a lot of things as a counsellor you need to build and develop on your own. So my trauma work I've built and developed on my own in training and in my practice. But I was very intrigued because when we spoke about doing this, I thought, oh, this is actually quite a good opportunity for me to refresh my research and my knowledge on the area of bullying, because it's huge, it's massive. So many people are impacted. And I think everybody would be lying if they stood up and said, I have never been bullied, or I've never been a bully.
Yeah.
Or I've never been involved in bullying.
And I think it's very, with online today, it can be very subtle. I experienced it recently where people were subtly liking negative comments. And obviously I'm very open to criticism, and I've learned to try and listen to people and not let my ego get in the way. But if I'm hurt about something and there's people going on, I feel like that's almost a more subtle form of trolling.
Huge
or bullying
thing.
When they're not actually having the guts to say anything, but they're liking comments of people that are coming for
but
them.
But there's something beautiful in what you do, because like you said, you are on a platform where you're very easily accessible, which is twofold, because in one respect you have such an amazing community of parents around you and people around you who can come to you as a public figure and say, I'm really struggling with this, can you talk about this, how would you deal with this, because they trust you. They see you as a trusted figure, and I think that's amazing. But on the other hand, being online and being a personality online in any respect is so hard, because like you're saying, people can very either overtly and troll you, or you know, very subtly troll you online. And it's
subtle trolling, I
and
think,
it's a very adult it's a very adult, as I discovered last night, the subtlety is very adult in bullying.
Right.
It's very adult.
Okay.
Very adult. Should we start adults or kids? I don't know what to do.
Can we start adults, because then I'd like to talk
and work
about,
our way back.
Because certainly for my daughter, she is very like me in the sense she's going to be behind the camera.
Oh, she's lovely.
She does meditation. And
oh, she's
like,
amazing.
Kids would love this on YouTube. I don't know if I have the anxiety, if my anxiety, you know, if I set her up her own channel and things. So I want to talk about bullying in kids and how to raise them to be resilient and strong. But I think we'll start with adults because, what's it all about? Why are people bullying?
Yeah.
Why do we do it? How can we prevent it? How can we get a thick skin to it? Because it's never going to stop.
No.
We need educated.
No, definitely. I think, one thing that I thought was good was to define it. And I was kind of looking to the definitions of bullying last night, just generally, adults or children. And two came up, which I have here, which I quite liked. One was the Australian Psychological Society, and they classified it as bullying as when a person deliberately and repeatedly hurts somebody else.
Okay.
And the UK Psychology Today, they said a deliberate and repeated attempt to cause harm to others of lesser power, which I quite liked. There was some
lesser power,
which I thought was quite interesting.
Of lesser power.
Lesser power, yeah. So that's kind of twofold there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do different, but one thing that people say time and time again, and I've heard people say to me and to other people, is that, oh, you know, old research really suggests, and people will say that, oh, people only bully to compensate for their low self-esteem, that's why people bully. And that's what people hear quite a lot, is like, oh, they're underconfident, they've got low self-esteem, that's why they're doing it, they know they don't feel good about themselves. Turns out that's not the case.
Boom, boom, boom.
I know. And like I said, I was, you know, sitting breastfeeding at 10 o'clock last night, waking up my husband to be like, guess what? He was like, I don't care. But I think it's, come on, be interested.
There's
interesting stuff here at 10 o'clock at night. But so old research suggested that that's what it was, that it was people compensating for just simply low self-esteem, that people had low self-esteem and that's why they would do it. However, I'm just going to read this from my own notes. So I've written down that new research in mental health circles suggests that bullies are in fact reluctant to be introspective. So people who are bullying do not want to look inside themselves. They don't want to explore how they're feeling about things, anything they're going through. And because they're reluctant to be introspective and to explore how they feel about themselves or the world around them, by attacking the insecurities of others or making them feel ashamed or humiliated, they can avoid even further being introspective and dealing with their own shame or humiliation. So it's it comes back around to yes, so people are still feeling, they are still ashamed in some, they are dealing with some level of shame or bad feeling, but they don't know that yet. And they don't want to have to figure that out and deal with it. So therefore they will attack other people's insecurities
right.
as a barrier. So it does come back around to that.
Okay.
But most bullies don't know how that's how they feel because they don't want to look into it.
Right, okay. So they just kind of put on this facade. It is very easy to make someone a scapegoat online. And
massively.
And to really go for it.
Yeah.
And then with that comes communities.
Mm.
You know, targeting people. And what I always say to my friends, and I don't know if it's an age thing, a maturity thing or what, but I said to a friend yesterday, we were out for lunch, and I said, I would hate to be that friend that went home and spoke about you behind your back, because if I'm with you now and I'm having a great time,
yeah.
and anything that happens I don't agree with,
yeah.
I would tell you to your face.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much freedom in life of me being straight and giving people all of you in honesty.
Yeah.
And this is, I get this message a lot of, you know, the playground mentality or anxiety, with, you know, that kind of whispering, what are people
yep.
talking about? And you would think that would stop, you know, I speak in schools and you can see that, you know, kids are kind of whispering.
Of course.
But you think that would stop once we
doesn't stop.
Get through the kind of...
Yeah, because people will never stop having their own stuff. Everybody's always got something going on.
Right.
That's a big thing. In mental health, everybody's always got something going on. Big, small, there's always something there. But bullies don't want to have to deal with what's going on for them. So by attacking somebody else, they can kind of avoid their own situation, their own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting. I didn't realise that. I didn't realise that that's kind of how the idea of, oh, they're just low in self-esteem. They don't actually know they're low in self-esteem. They might think they're absolutely fantastic.
Right.
And I also found in research that for adults and for children, bullies, for the most part, are very popular.
Yes, right.
There's a link there between the popularity
uh-huh.
and the kind of reluctance to be introspective as well. So that's there's something there as well, which is quite... And that's for adults and for children.
That's really interesting.
It's very interesting.
So from a mental health point of view,
yes.
because I always say... You know, someone's been an asshole, right?
Oh, yeah.
In a traffic jam, I'll say they've probably got poor mental health. You know? And I always like to see the good in people. And
yep.
I did a poll on Instagram and they're like, no, they're just an asshole. and we can all be an asshole for stress or running
oh, yeah.
or whatever. But where's the line between, right? Because a lot of people that write to me that have poor mental health
yeah.
are the nicest, sweetest people,
yeah.
right? I can't see them being a bully. If
yeah.
they've got depression or anxiety, but I can't see them being a bully. I see them being really kind and nice. So... Is bullying a choice, no matter what your mental health is? Is it a choice?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I think that if you are aware of your own mental health challenges in any respect, if you have that awareness,
mm-hmm.
you can ultimately then have a level of empathy for other people.
Because you're aware.
Because you have an awareness. I think that's what I would say about that. That's not an overall counselor thing. That's just what... That would be my suggestion. That because you have understanding of what you have been through or going through, you can therefore have a level of empathy on a different level for other people.
Yes.
We call it in counselling, we call it a touchstone.
Okay.
So you can have that touchstone for somebody else and go, I've not really dealt with that, but I could akin that to something that I have been through or that somebody I know has been through, and then I can touch on that a little bit and pull
right.
what I've experienced or what somebody else has experienced from that.
Mm-hmm. So
that's,
it teaches us empathy.
I think so. I think that our own challenges and our own exploration of ourselves can... Because empathy is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy is a skill like anything else. I think people just think that they're naturally empathic. But
no.
the reality is that empathy is a skill. We get trained to be more empathic as counsellors.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to think that I'm just a fairy godmother. I'm not, you know.
I did a course and it was when I was raising Bonnie when she was really young.
Mm.
And our kids aren't, the brain research shows they're not born empathetic.
No.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
But if the parents teach them,
yep.
so it's that if she falls and I go, oh, sort yourself out, or if I go, that must really, really hurt.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
And kind of relate to her.
Yeah.
Whereas if she is, yeah, you're like, pull yourself together. And that's quite a closed-minded
it's
approach.
Very closed, yeah.
I don't know if it's generational or there's people still our age,
yeah, probably.
Younger, that have that closed-minded
yeah.
approach. But... After that course, I really started to go, oh, I can really see
yeah.
why you're that way. And as a result, I am noticing that she's got a very caring side.
Oh, she's so caring. Yeah. When I was pregnant, she was like, can I come and babysit? Oh, yeah. I was like, yes, please do.
She's obviously one, and in her reports to say if a kid doesn't look happy, she tries to make them laugh. Yeah. So it's a learned skill.
Oh, hugely. And there's in one of my favourite books recently, apart from yours, obvs, little plug there, little plug, was when I was pregnant, we both read French Children Don't Throw Food. Which is, if you've not read that, very good book. I would highly recommend that to any parents because it's a very interesting book. But in it, I'm pretty sure, if it's not from this book, I apologise. I'm very sleep deprived. It could have been from something else. But they spoke about in France, in a nursery, if a kid hits another kid or there's been a fall or a scrape, they are taught to go to that other child just with a wet towel, and they say, are you okay? Do you need a cuddle? Can I help you?
Aww.
Even if they've done it themselves, even if they've gone and walloped that kid, they're still taught from a very early age in nursery to go over with that wet towel and, you know, that little hug and say, are you okay? Can I help you? What do you need?
Can we do that in the UK?
I know. This book made me want to move to France.
It gets a bit stick. No.
Oh, they've got it. The Parisian parents seem to have like it down in regard to parenting. I read this book and just went, wow. It's an American mother, and a British father who raise their kid in Paris, kids,
wow.
Children. But yeah, worth it. But yes, that was one, and that is just teaching your children empathy. That
it's
is
so
just
important. It's yeah. So because it's a life skill as an adult, and
massively.
I've found, like from a mojo. If I'm really listening, yeah. And I put another book here, another book that's not mine.
That's not yours.
But this, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, it's huge.
I remember having, I've not read the whole, like I've been dipping in and out of it, and I need to read it again, because I'm the sort of person that likes to underline books.
And then go back.
Take notes.
Yeah.
And go back. But I remember I was having a tough time because I felt, one of the things I've struggled with in my own growth is very easy to get defensive. You know, people see me as quite laid back, but I don't like getting criticism.
Nobody likes getting criticism. Nobody.
But I would rather be wrong so then I can fix it.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with saying sorry if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But with this, it was a situation with a friend a while ago and I felt she was attacking me because I was working a lot and I was on my phone a lot. But actually when I really got into her head, which it talks about in this book, really just thinking, right, okay, it's so easy for me to say, who does she think she is? But
yeah.
Actually, most of the time people that love us have a point if they,
of course.
And it's really taking that time to say, right, okay, I see where you're coming from. You don't have to totally agree.
No, but you're getting that touchstone again. You're saying, okay, I can see where you're at just now. I can get inside your head a little bit, feel where you are, and I can use some sort of touchstone to relate that to my own life or something that I know or an experience that I've had.
Yes.
Therefore, the empathy becomes a bit easier. One thing in counselling we say is that you're never, ever going to experience something exactly as a client has experienced it. That's just life. That's normal.
Yeah.
But you can use those touchstones to be like, oh, right, I'm kind of feeling that. I'm kind of understanding that anger or that sadness, or I can relate to that a little bit more. And that's all you've done is you've just had that touchstone moment of, okay, what's going on for you? I understand this is not wholly about me, because it usually isn't.
Yeah, of course. So don't take it. That's the first chapter in my book. Is
yeah.
Don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally. Yeah, you can. Yeah. And I think, yeah. And I think there has to be a fine line, though, between people having to develop a thicker skin if you're a public person, but also people having a level of respect online that you would still have in person.
And people just don't.
They don't. And it's a bit of a free-for-all online, I would say. It can be a bit. And it's just as simple as it's a barrier. There's a guise there that they don't need to do it in person. You can be braver online. You can be, and that's not always a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
That can be quite dangerous. But I think there's also something to be said. I wrote this down last night, maybe 11 o'clock, I don't know, post-breastfeeding. I wrote down that there's definitely, I do a lot and have done a lot of work with the young woman, I'm choking on tea, the young woman that I've worked with or who identify as being female on internalized misogyny,
okay.
Which is huge. And it's not to be confused with bullying, because it's very different.
Okay.
And I think that can impact, I think, from teenage girls to, older women in there. I mean, I've worked with women up to, 87, who've experienced internalised misogyny.
So talk us through what that is.
I can hear Barry in my head going, God, you're talking about feminist stuff again.
It's International Men's Day as well.
I know. So, yes, internalised misogyny. We all know what misogyny is, but internalised misogyny is the idea that it's women attacking women for a specific reason. So it's, as young women, we're often brought up feeling like we need to compete with each other. We're taught that we need to compete. Men really aren't taught that. They're told to be part of your football team.
Team players.
You've got to be a team player in all respects, support each other.
Yeah.
All these kind of different things. Whereas for women, a lot of time, and for girls, there's this idea that comes from society and family and peers and even teachers sometimes that, you know, you need to be pretty but not slutty, and you need to be smart but not too smart, and all these different ideologies about what it means to be female and to be feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes really dangerous because it then makes women think that to be the pinnacle of all these things, which are really hard to reach, the only way to do that is to tear each other down.
Right. Because someone said to me, actually, quite a traditional chap, he said, because I break the norm, right?
Yeah.
I'm always for girls and guys.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say to you, you look so hot.
Oh, I'm so into that, yeah.
And I don't, because so a guy challenged me and he said, is that not fake though, you saying that, but secretly you're intimidated? And I was like, no.
No.
Hand on heart. No, I just speak the truth.
Yeah.
So if there's a woman that's gorgeous,
yeah,
or a guy that's gorgeous,
yeah.
I mean, I have to watch with a guy who's standing with his
God, you're beautiful.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I can, sometimes I need to tone it down a bit.
Yeah.
But I am that kind of person.
Yeah.
And it is genuine.
Yeah.
I just love to compliment people.
Oh no, I agree that, I totally agree with that. I have this whole idea that if you think something nice about somebody and it's appropriate, just say it.
Just say it. That's weird.
Oh no, I've taught this to my young women for such a long time that I've worked with, and they initially go, that's so weird, I'm not doing that. I did it when I worked in group kind of therapeutic situations for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And initially when we did this, they were like, I'm not doing that, that's so weird. Like, why would you make me do that? And actually in a couple of weeks they come around and go, I've realized that you've been doing that to me since day one.
Oh.
And I've only just clicked, and it makes me feel so good about myself when I come in the room and you say, oh, you've had your hair cut, it looks really good, or by the way, I meant to say to you last week, that mask you made, it really made me think of X and Y and I loved it.
Yeah.
And just when you think something nice, just say it. And then they realize, like, oh, actually you've been doing it to me and it wasn't weird, I just haven't even realized you've been doing it. It was so subtle and just in conversation, because it's not, you're not running up to people and going, you're gorgeous, and then running away. I mean, maybe you are, Jojo, I don't know. I mean, knowing you, Jojo, maybe you are David Lloyd, you know, in the middle of the gym, you're beautiful.
More away. Alcohol involved, I'm a bit like, hey, baby, sexy, but no, actually, these days, I just say what I think. And so I was out for brunch with a group of bloggers a few months ago, and I just met a couple of them that day.
Yep.
And I remember being like, oh, you look so fit, I love you. And then she sort of looked to the girl who knew me and she said, oh, she's fine.
She's fine.
Don't worry, she's awesome. Like, she means it. Like, she's.
Oh, that's. But it's really sad that we assume that people don't mean it.
I know, and I'm very aware of that, that some people will think, what are you on about? Like,
yeah.
Or what are you after?
What do you want? There's that almost cynicism of, like, what do you want from me?
Yeah, I remember saying to a guy, oh, I love your stuff, and making recommendations. And he'd said to me, I need to recommend you now. And I should have said at the time, that's not why
I want it.
Doing it.
Yeah.
I just genuinely think your stuff's really good and I'm recommending you. I hate that. And obviously in business, we help each other out.
Of course.
And stuff, but
yeah.
I would never assume, like, there's some people I admire that have got loads and loads of following and they'll be like, yeah, whatever. And some are like, oh, thank you so much, no matter how big the following goes. I'd like to hope I would be that way too.
That person, yeah.
Or maybe the person's just so busy, I'm not, because you can't take these things personally either, but some people will look and go,
yeah,
oh, whatever, what are you after?
Oh, yeah.
What am I following? And get very...
very precious.
Very precious about it. Because sometimes people say to me, oh, thanks so much for replying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal. I'm just replying to you. We're all busy.
No matter how many followers anybody has, you're still a human being.
Yeah.
And you still started somewhere.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and that's going back to the idea of maternalized misogyny, that, you know, everybody started somewhere, especially if you're a woman. Like, we just spoke about that pre-recording. As a woman in business, it is very hard, you know, because men in business find it a lot easier because they're ready to support each other. They've been taught to support each other. Whereas I do think that as a woman in business, it can be trickier, because as a woman, you're taught to compete. Because if you're competing, then you're tearing other women down, and then you are therefore better.
Okay.
So it's that mentality of, it's not teamwork that helps you get better. It's tearing each other down to reach these unattainable goals that are set for us often as women, for sure.
I love that.
And that's why I think a lot of the time, like you're saying, when women come back and they're quite suspicious of, like, why are you saying I look so nice today?
Mm-hmm.
And they think suspiciously of it because they think they have that internalized misogyny mindset. Instead of just taking it as it is, they go, well, what does she want from me?
Yes.
Or how is she trying to be better than me? Or any of these, that kind of can come into the frame a little bit.
Right.
One thing that I found really strange is that since having baby Theo,
he's gorgeous.
Oh, he's also a monkey with reflux who doesn't sleep well in the day, though. I mean, he's amazing, but a lot of women, he's a very small baby. I was a small pregnant lady and I'm small, he's a small baby. So I do get a lot of comments on him. He's so cute, all these things. He's a normal size small baby, not abnormally small. But then I had a woman come up to me in the GP practice 2 days ago, immunization day, bad day for everybody, bad day for all. And she was just like, you look amazing.
Aww.
And she was like, how old is he? You look great. And I was like, oh, he's like 9 weeks this weekend. And she was just like, you look amazing for 9 weeks. And I had to quickly switch my head off from, oh, she's saying it to make fun of me. Or she's saying it,
right.
You know, I had to quickly switch off that brain and go, oh, that's actually a really nice thing to say. Thank you so much.
Just accept it.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that is it. And I don't feel great yet. You know, I have a lot of people saying, you look amazing
you
for him.
You do look amazing.
Thank you.
I do.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Hey, baby, you're like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, well, you look amazing.
Yeah, I was like sweaty, kind of like baby clad. Yeah, no, and it's a hard thing. Even when you are aware of it, it's a hard thing to switch off. So it's difficult to accept and it won't come overnight. But I think internalized misogyny and bullying are kind of separate. There's a separation there because when women are involved in internalized misogyny, it's more about trying to be perfect in a way that they've told to be, so tearing other women down. Whereas bullying is kind of trying to mask your own shame or insecurities, or exploring that shame and insecurities on any level by attacking somebody else.
Right.
So it's almost like two
separate.
They're
exploring it, you think, in a way they don't realise.
I don't know. It's sort of so hard to know, isn't it? I think that I guess there must be some sort of, I mean, this might be wrong, all those other counsellors and psychologists
really
listening,
interested.
But I'm assuming, if it was me thinking about it, I would say that if you are unable or unwilling to explore your own shame and insecurities or kind of challenges, but you're attacking somebody else's, there must be some level of understanding in that, or a level of, yeah, there's something there, isn't there, I guess.
Yeah,
so, yeah. It's quite interesting, but it's the same for kids. It is the same for children.
Yeah.
None of these things really change.
So is it the way we're raising our kids that make them more likely to be a bully? Or what can we do to stop
Not sure.
that?
I'd love to know statistics. Of course I would. I would love to know statistics on countries who are maybe seemingly more empathic or maybe seemingly more open about their feelings and the statistics on bullying rates in those countries in comparison to the UK. Because I would imagine that if we had an overall better level of empathy and willingness to self-explore, therefore the rates of bullying would go down.
Yeah.
Because that's what bullying is. It's that unwillingness to explore your own self.
Right.
And the unwillingness to have empathy. Yeah.
To deflect.
Yeah.
From what you're going on that you may be unaware of.
That's what I would assume. So I would want to know. So boring. I would love to know statistics on that. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, one would imagine that if we were raising our kids to be a bit more empathic, to be a bit more willing to explore their feelings, and us as parents as well, you know, us as parents being willing to cry in front of our children or show our emotions and not, because it can be very easy, I think, to just wrap our children up in cotton wool and just say, everything's fine, I never get sad, I never get angry.
Yeah.
Because that makes children feel like they have to say, I'm fine, I never get sad, I never get angry. And especially for young men and boys, because we're still kind of, I mean, I've worked with a lot of men in their 40s to 60s who still come from that generation of boys don't cry.
Yeah, and it's so
wrong. And it's so sad because that might be the first time they've come to therapy at breaking point when they're 53. You know, and they're like, I remember, so one of my case studies, he was amazing and he was such a star who never came for his last appointment. But on our second last appointment, he said, I just wish I'd done this 20 years ago. I wish I'd done this 20 years ago. And that really sat with me because he just felt like he couldn't, because the generation he was brought up in was, you don't talk about your feelings, boys don't cry, you have to be fine all the time. And that must in itself promote a level of bullying, the idea of you have to be fine and perfect all the time.
Okay, so you deflect onto others.
Yeah.
So that you don't deal with the issues because you have to put on a brave face.
Yeah, totally. And I think that that's something that's very important for me. A lot of people will come to my home and will be my friend and say, your home is beautiful, or, your life looks perfect. And I'm really quick to say, no, it's definitely not the case. You know, I look nice right now in this photo, or my home looks really good at the second you're having coffee with me and my baby. Mm-hmm. But I promise you, Jojo, that yesterday I had not hoovered and my cleaner hadn't been here, and you know, the room that everybody can't see in when they walk past my house was maybe the only tidied room in the house, you know. So I think it's important to acknowledge that we're not perfect and that we do have feelings. And I think we have a misconcept as well that there's such a thing as positive and negative feelings, and we should hide negative feelings from our children. Mm-hmm. We should hide sadness and anger and fear. Where the reality is, they're not actually negative, they're just feelings. Feelings don't come into brackets, you know, they don't come into, different boxes. We should just say, yeah, mummy is feeling a bit scared today.
Yeah, it's just, it's totally normal.
It's normal to feel scared.
It's normal to cry, it's normal to feel jealous even.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm feeling quite jealous because they're doing this. Or,
yeah.
But it's okay because I know it'll be fine.
100%.
And it go actually, because morning routine for me, it helps me now. This doesn't apply to you right now,
oh my
I
gosh.
Don't think, because when I had
9 weeks,
when we were really young, I just want sleep is more important at your stage than morning routine. And I got a post out this morning, and then I thought, some parents are going to hate me because I'm
thinking about
morning routine, and they've probably had no sleep. And I've been there, but at
the moment, it's valid.
I am able,
yeah.
I'm in a good morning routine because I'm getting sleep.
Of course.
So I've started going to bed earlier.
Yeah.
I'm waking up at like 6:30. Now this isn't normal for me, but I'm really enjoying it.
That's
so
lovely.
It's you know, this chat that people are about morning routine, and they see people that are really successful and achieve their dreams have a morning routine.
Mm-hmm.
So just meditation. Bonnie and I do it together some days. So this morning she just cuddled in and the guys were sleeping. We just meditated and cuddled and spoke about what we're thankful for and tried to really build ourselves up, and this is what I like about myself.
Yep.
And these kind of routines really help you to be happier and therefore nicer and less likely to be a bully.
And also less, I think, it, like we said, it also helps you self-explore. If you're doing things like, as simple as, I mean, eating breakfast every morning, that'll set you off on a good foot. It'll help you think clearer, think straighter.
Mm-hmm.
Mindfulness, you know, anything at all that sets your day off in a good way will help you have a clearer, more focused head.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a clearer, more focused head, you're less likely to be ratty or annoyed or angry at yourself or other people or any of these things. So I disagree with what you've just said there. I think that, you know, even though Theo is, like 9 weeks old. 9 weeks old? Yes, 9 weeks old. How old is my child? 9 weeks old. Yeah, I mean, we still have a morning routine. Every morning I get up, I have breakfast with him in bed because he's a breastfeeding monster. But we get dressed together. We go out. I think I said this on Instagram maybe. We try and do like 5 to 7K every day in the buggy. That's what we do. Like, that's one of our routines every day in the morning. And sometimes we don't make that. Babies cry. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
He gets grumpy. But I think it's a good thing to have a routine.
Yeah,
and especially involving your kids in that, I think, is huge.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing things like affirmations or meditation, you can look at what you're thankful for. You can look at, and like we're saying, yes, it's good to say to your kids, I'm scared, I'm jealous, I'm angry, I'm annoyed. But it's also good to explain why.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're rationalizing why with your children, you're also doing it with yourself, even if you haven't yet done it with yourself.
Okay.
So you sit and go, do you know what? Yeah, I'm sorry. Mummy is feeling a bit jealous today because mummy looks at other 9-week-old babies who don't have silent reflux, who are already sleeping through the night.
Uh-huh.
And we know that we're not sleeping through the night yet. And actually, that's okay, though, because I know it's going to be a bit more difficult for you because you have this reflux and that's hard. And and then you start to rationalize it a little bit with yourself, and then you can take that step back again and go, oh, yeah.
Okay.
You can have that self-empathy and that self-understanding as well by just talking it through with yourself and your kids.
I love that.
Yeah, I chat to Theo all the time. We have good chats.
I mean, I think, do you think there's triggers that make people more likely to go on and be horrible online? Or
oh, yeah.
Would you say early parenting is one of them? Or?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, attachment theory is huge, isn't it? Like, attachment theory talks about Should I talk about the Touch with You? Is that really boring? I don't know.
I love all this. I'm sure you'll listen to this more will be
really interesting. Okay, so attachment theory is the idea that if, sorry to people who are reading this, it thinks in very layman's terms, it thinks about how attached you were to your parents or your mother or father or caregivers, whoever they were, grandparents, foster carers, whoever, as a child. Mm-hmm. And if you have a secure attachment, you tend to have a secure attachment to people later on in life. You can cope generally well with situations, etc., etc. You could also have what is called an anxious attachment, or an ambivalent attachment. And it's probably, that could be a whole other podcast, I won't ramble on, but people who maybe don't have as a secure attachment might, it doesn't mean that you will always have that type of attachment. You can fluctuate in your attachment style as you grow and you change. I don't think I've always had a secure attachment. I don't think I have, but I think I've grown and developed in my attachment. Whereas if you don't have a secure attachment, it can be easier for you to withdraw or to attack or to, you know, be different ways in different situations. So I think that's probably partly, but I think it's also openness, conversation, being aware that it's okay to feel. Mm-hmm. I think that's massive. People who feel like it's not okay to feel will attack others who do think it's okay to feel.
Right. Is this the snowflake society term that I've been hearing? Yeah. That really pissed me off.
Oh, that's very strange.
Yeah, I've been a rebel against.
A rebel against the snowflake.
Don't use that term around me.
No, I think it's very important that we're open about our feelings, and I think it's great that we're now kind of in a generation where we are starting to have more conversations about mental health and be aware of our mental health. But yeah, of course, I think if you're attacking people online, there's something going on there. Regardless of what it is, there's something happening there in your life that makes you feel like you need to go online and attack either people that you know or random strangers in either an overt or subtle way. Because the reality is that if you're sitting happy in the evening, you're not going to sit and go, I'm going to go and attack Jojo tonight.
Right.
You know? Uh-huh. Regardless of how you feel about something, I think even if you're really angry about a situation, so imagine I had done something and people would find out. If you have a healthy mentality to relationships and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you're not going to therefore just go and send me really horrible text messages, or, you know, I don't have social media, but, you know, you're not going to call me and give me a load of abuse or find me online. You know, it's not going to happen. You'd probably have a conversation with me saying, actually, that really annoyed me, or that made me angry because of these reasons. Okay. But they wouldn't go and subtly troll me for no reason, kind of. Yeah. That's not what they would spend their time and energy doing.
Right.
Because it's a lot of energy to do stuff like that.
It's a lot of energy. What about if it's a debate? Where do we draw the line? So if you feel passionately about something, so you support the football team and you really, really believe, do you agree with debates online, or do you think that's a
form of challenge? No, I think debates are fine. I think I love a healthy debate. Okay. I think Barry would say that as well. We love a bit of a healthy debate.
Okay.
And I do think debating is very important. It's the only way we can grow and develop our ideas and ideologies and philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a fine line. I mean, the definitions, I think, the way they speak about bullying, if you're deliberate, like they said, if you're deliberately and repeatedly hurting somebody, then it's not a debate.
Yes.
Then it's bullying.
Yeah.
If you're having a debate, you're listening to both sides of the conversation. You're saying, this is my side of the conversation, but actually that's yours too. And that's pulling them both into the foreground and saying, okay, well, how do we discuss this then?
In a sensible, adult way where you're trying to have empathy in a way.
Of course.
I see that,
yeah.
But this is how I feel and that won't change.
Exactly, it. Yeah. Yes. And a debate can end with two sides still saying, I will not agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But it might still end with those two sides who won't agree with each other saying, but I kind of took something from there and I understood that and I listened to this part.
Yes.
Which is important, if you're just deliberately and repeatedly attacking somebody to hurt them, it's bullying.
That's bullying. It's bullying. So attacking someone to hurt them. Do you do that, guys? Let's try to stop it. Maybe you're a bully and you don't realise that we can all be bullies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said at the start, I think that if anybody sat and said, I've never been bullied, I've never taken part in bullying, because you don't need to be a bully to take part in bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else as well. There's always going to be a bully. But it's not, you don't need to follow the bully.
Yeah.
And that's hard. It's really difficult. One of the few things that sticks with me, I don't know if I said this on my last podcast, so one of the few things that sticks with me from my childhood was that I was told that never be afraid to be the first person that says yes or no.
Right.
Against everybody else. That's very powerful. It's so powerful.
Because you said earlier, a lot of bullies are popular.
Yeah.
So What makes them popular? Is it an attractive, like, is it a treat?
I'm not sure. I didn't get that far into the research for a brief fallacy last night. Let's but there's something there. Let's hypothesize. I'm not sure. I mean, I guess it would make your bullying more successful if you're popular because you already have a following. Mm-hmm. So therefore, instead of just one person bullying somebody, you have a group. It's a group mentality.
Right, yeah.
If that makes sense. So it might not be that bullies, they've obviously said it's statistically it's more likely that bullies would be popular. Maybe it's more successful bullies will be popular because they have a bigger following.
And it's like a gang. I had that recently where I felt like certain people ganging up. Yeah. They weren't actually saying things, but they have the balls to come and say to me and take part in a debate.
Exactly.
It was like gang mentality.
Yeah.
And
that's it.
Really child-like behaviour that I was thinking, oh, I can't believe this happens in grown adults.
It happens to grown adults, for
people
sure.
People don't have the respect to tell you to your face in a sensible, let's have a conversation. Instead, we'll just bitch behind your back and then make subtle, dicks. And I just think, tell me to my face.
Because it's scary to be the first person to say yes or no. It's scary to turn, it would be terrifying to turn around to that bully as part of that group, even if you are an adult and you don't realise that's what's happening, and say, actually, I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah.
Like, hands up, I'm not going to take part in that. That's really hard.
Yeah.
And that takes balls. And I don't like that term, by the way, as a feminist, but it's, it does.
What can we have as a view that takes... Because my dad called me a feminist recently, and Dad and I are so close. He's like my best friend.
I love that. So, book, so nice.
So good. He's in such great form at the moment too. And what would I call?
Do you know what? There is a term for it, and I can't think what it is. And that
not tits.
Yeah, not tits. I know. God, I need to think about that. We'll think about that one.
Right, we'll think of a new one.
But you need
to comment if you.
I know. If you know what it is, I feel like I should know. But just the severe sleep deprivation of only getting 3 hours at a time, it does. It takes its toll.
You're on top. Considering I would not have been as sharp as a button.
Oh God. I'm not. But I mean, it takes a lot of guts to sit there and go, I'm going to step away from this, mm-hmm. even as an adult. That's really difficult. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I experienced recently was I hated the newborn stage. I really didn't enjoy it. And that was, it's so hard. It was for a variety of reasons. We don't have a lot of close family here. My friends are amazing and my family are too, but we don't have close family here. Bonnie
wants the baby,
so. Bonnie wants, for sure. She's coming over, and Theo was very unwell when he was born. We didn't know why for a couple of weeks until he was on, and he's a lot better now. He's on medication, which is fine, but it was really rough. And I felt like everybody around me was sitting going, I love the newborn stage, it's amazing. And I'm sitting there going, am I a horrible person?
Were you being open about how you felt about it?
No, I was totally hiding. I just wasn't saying anything. I was totally hiding it. I was like, nope, just not, as you do, I'm just not going to say anything. And I thought, oh God, I'm really struggling, I'm really not enjoying this. I love my baby, I adore him, but this is like hell.
And but that's a shame that you felt you couldn't say that.
Yeah, I felt like I couldn't say anything, and all these women were saying, it's amazing. And then I listened to, I was telling you, I was listening to Happy Mom, Happy Baby with G Fletcher, and the amount of people who came on her show, and they were like, it's totally normal to think it's hellish if you don't like it. And I was like, thank God. Wow. And as soon as I said it to a couple of my friends, they were like, oh yeah, no, it's terrible.
Yeah,
and I felt like it's, but that was me being the first person to say yes or no, to be the first person to say, no, it's so difficult and it's so hard and there's all this milk and your body and
hard.
Oh my God, there's all this stuff going on and your baby's crying, you don't know why. And
yeah.
Oh my goodness. And but I kind of opened that discourse with a lot of my friends who either went, yeah, it was really hard for me, or it's currently very hard for me, I'm struggling too.
Yeah.
But no, it's really, it's difficult to be the first person to say yes or no. And I think that would be one thing that I would encourage people to do is, bullies aren't always aware they're bullies because of what they're doing, because they're masking their own introspective exploration. But I think people who follow bullies probably are maybe a bit more aware of what they're doing, because it is scary to turn around to somebody as an adult and say, I don't agree with you. But I would really encourage people, if you feel safe enough, to turn around in a healthy way and say, actually, I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't really want to do that. Or actually, I think I am just going to talk to Jojo in the playground.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. It's okay to be that person, because what I've learned is that as soon as you say whatever other people are not saying, people turn in and say the same thing too, and say, oh, actually, I was feeling that way as well, but I was too scared to say anything.
Yeah,
there's something in that.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to be the first person to say yes or no.
Yeah.
Because it's always going to help somebody.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I see squabbles online a lot, and I don't have the time to get involved.
Oh, no.
But sometimes, if you hear something, you think, oh, that's so not right.
Yeah.
You could be there all day.
Oh, my God, yeah.
are a breeding ground. I had, so a question I had was,
yes,
someone,
fire questions.
Someone at school had been bullying someone, but the person was in a position of authority.
Oh, that's so hard.
And it's gone to the head and they're attacking.
Yeah.
What can I say to that person?
So is this an adult or a child? An adult. Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. And that's one of the definitions we had at the start, which was a deliberate and repeated attempt to cause harm to others of lesser power. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Because when you're in authority, you do instantly have a promoted level of power in the situation, whether it be because you're in a career, because you're in a family, you know, it could be anything. I mean, a few things that I read about that really sat with me. The first thing that they said about dealing with adult bullying specifically is acknowledge what it is for what it is bullying. Because it's very easy to start to self-blame when you're being bullied, because you're being victimized and you're being put in a very vulnerable position. And I think when you're vulnerable, it's easy to go, this is my fault. I've done something. This could have happened if I had done X or Y. No, not at all. The reality is bullying for the sake of bullying. Keep yourself safe. That was a big one that kind of kept coming up in the research I was doing. You know, if you are able to, avoid the person. If you are able to, get support, get help, you know, talk to people, keep yourself in a safe position. But it's not always possible.
It's hard because I wanted to, I don't know the person and I don't know any of the people that have complained, but I wanted to find out the school and make an anonymous complaint because I feel partly responsible, but I don't really know what's right.
What's right? I mean, a big one that came up again was know your fundamental human rights. That's huge. Know your fundamental human rights, and that establishes your boundaries as a person. Mm-hmm. If you just go up and look up the UN human rights, you will sit and go through that and go, actually, when I'm being bullied, those human rights are not being upheld.
Okay.
And that needs, and by looking at those human, and it sounds really extreme, but by looking at your just basic human rights, you can re-establish your boundaries again, because that's what bullies do. They tear down your boundaries, they make you vulnerable.
Yeah.
And by looking at those, you can say, okay, hold on, let me take a step back and re-establish those safe bubbles, those safe walls again for myself.
Okay.
I think that's quite big.
I like that.
Yeah. Surround yourself with cheerleaders and be kind to yourself. That's huge. That's massive. You know, surround yourself with positive people. Be kind to yourself. Limit your exposure to the bully. Not easy when you're in work. I get that. A big one is don't react to the attack. Don't react to the attack. If you're going to respond, respond with a voice of reason. But that also means don't get upset. Reacting to the attack isn't always just getting angry. It's also getting upset. And that's hard. And I've got to go on going back on everything I've said about it. It's okay to feel. But when it comes to bullying, that's what the bully wants. The bully wants a reaction.
Yeah.
And if you don't react to the attack, it's taking that step back.
Yeah. I would say, because I've had, not that much, but if it's like a bully that comes onto my page, they're just blocked instantly.
Yeah.
And I have no qualms with doing that.
Yeah.
For me, though, you can't really do, if there's sort of subtle trolling where it's liking comments,
yeah,
you can't really do anything about that.
No,
you?
There's not a huge amount you can do. I mean, and that's acknowledging it for what it is, being kind to yourself, limiting that exposure, saying, yeah, do you know what, somebody's like that, that's it. That is what it is. It's bullying, it's trolling, but I'm not going to get myself involved in it, because I'll be kind to myself. I'll look at all the other amazing comments I've had, or I'll look at all these amazing people in my life that are supporting me through this.
Yeah.
It's very easy to minimize the positive around you when you're being bullied because you're feeling vulnerable, and maximize the negative.
Yes.
Very easy. And that's not to say, oh, you're doing a terrible job by minimizing, but that's just what happens. It becomes all encompassing, and that's really hard.
The brain is, you know, hones in on the negative.
Totally. And I think the biggest one is ask for help if you need it.
Yeah.
Ask for help if you need it. That's huge. I mean, especially for the person who contacted you, they need a bit more help. Whether it be a union rep, or whether it be going to therapy and working through it with somebody who's non-biased, whether it be, you know, I mean, there's so many, it depends on the situation, doesn't it? It's so hard to know, but yeah, ask for help if you need it. Help comes in all sorts of guises, and all these points as well, they count for kids as well. You know, these are the same points that you would give children in a more child-friendly manner.
How do we, I had a question about, you know, kids that are groomed. What's the...
Oh yeah, huge.
What's the prosecution? Do you know about that?
So we, in Edinburgh Rape Crisis, we work with children and young people who come forward often who have been groomed, which has resulted in maybe something bigger happening. Maybe they've been groomed and nothing more has happened yet. It's been picked up by child protection. It really depends on what's happened. It's really dependent on whether that person is identifiable. Do they know who they are? Can they find them? Most of the time they can. You're not anonymous on the internet anymore, I'm afraid, guys, at all. So, yeah, I mean, when it comes to sexual violence, the prevalence of women doing it is still very, very, very small. It's not to say it's not there. Yeah. It is there 100%, but the prevalence of sexual violence is perpetrated by men, and that's men against boys and men as well.
Yeah.
That's still the biggest percentage.
But is it boys over girls? Is the bigger percentage?
Oh, no, I mean, so we say 1 in 3 women will experience sexual violence in their lives. I think it's less than that, though. I think it's more than that. So I think this is just, I'd say maybe 1 in 2. I'd say maybe we're closer to maybe every woman might experience some form of sexual violence. Sexual violence can be getting inappropriately catcalled in the street. It can be anything. And if you think about it that way, nearly every woman I know has experienced some form of sexual violence. And they say, I think the recent statistic was, that's really bad. I can't remember this in my own job. 1 in 5, 1 in 6 boys and men. But again, I think it's probably more than that, because the prevalence of boys and men that contact us or that we work with, and I think it's much, it's much higher. But yes, it is, the perpetrator is generally still male.
And are these people bullies? What's the term for them, or sexual bullies, or what would be the...
No, I think when it comes to grooming and when it comes to that's sexual violence. Yeah. That's a whole other ball game. If I mean, there's different people are involved in sexual violence for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Sexual violence can occur because people themselves have experienced sexual violence.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. It's very sticky. It's a really sticky ground. It's what we work with a lot. And sexual violence can occur because of power differentiations and power imbalance. Sexual violence can occur, I mean, so many different reasons. So many different reasons. And most of the time, the reasons aren't really important. It's more about getting the support to that person who needs it.
Yeah.
Because if you're working with somebody who's experienced sexual violence, you're dealing with the aftermath.
Yeah.
And... yeah, grooming's huge. Grooming's a really big, scary one, I think, for parents as well, because it's so easy. It's so easy these days. I mean, you hear it on about Instagram now, and you hear, especially when we live in a world where people want stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People want things. Things are what we want and what we feel like we need. And if somebody's going to a 13-year-old, actually, I can give you all this stuff and all these things that you see on Instagram. And it's very easy. And people who groom are very clever. They know what they're doing. That's a big thing to remember as well. They're very aware of what they're doing.
What are the warning signs to educate kids when they're old enough? Like if you've got a teenager and they're being groomed?
Oh, if it was me, I would be talking to children in primary schools about grooming. Uh-huh. If it was up to me. I think it's a huge topic. We need to be speaking about sexual violence to younger and younger generations. Mm-hmm. In Edinburgh Crisis, we have some amazing workers who, violence prevention workers, shout out to you guys, who they go out to schools and in Edinburgh and the Lothians, and they talk about sexual violence in a really positive, interesting way. So they can be informed. So yeah, if you are working at a school or you would want them to come to your school, I don't know, my boss might hate me for doing this, they're probably really overloaded with work, and I'm like, contact us too. I'm not even here, I'm on mat leave. But they do some amazing work in Edinburgh. So if you are in the area and your child is at a school that you think we would really benefit from this, yeah, definitely give us a shout, because that's what our prevention workers do.
What sort of age do you think is appropriate to start that conversation?
For me, I think it's important to start having that conversation when... if it was me, honestly, NSPCC, I think it is, have a fantastic resource called Pants. I think it's called Pants. Look it up, it's great. That can be done with children, I think, as young as 4 or 5.
Wow.
And that talks about who should be allowed to touch your pants.
Okay.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Who should be touching your pants, who shouldn't be touching your pants. And it's a lovely, it's animated, it's really lovely, it's very colourful and bright, and kids love it. It's a song, it's great, it's very funny, but the underlying concept is about grooming and about sexual violence. And it's really important that we have these conversations young, so actually if they are 5 or 6 or 7 and they say, oh, hold on, I remember pants, and actually that person shouldn't be touching my pants.
Mm-hmm. Because with these people, they're doing this, are they saying, you were saying about things, they're trying to lure.
Sorry, yeah, we totally sidetracked there. Yeah, so I mean, warning signs of sexual violence. Ooh, I mean, so many things. It's really tricky. I think if a child starts exhibiting any sort of challenging behaviour, and when I say challenging behaviour, I don't just mean kicking off. I mean being really withdrawn, not seeming like themselves. If they suddenly start to have a lot of money, if they suddenly start to have things that you're like, I didn't buy that, and they kind of give a strange reason for it. It's not always easy to tell if your child has a lot of money. I really appreciate that they can hide it, but yeah, if they're suddenly feels like there's a lot of cash flying around, if there's they've been bought things and stuff, if they are, I mean, this is a difficult one as well, because I know a lot of our children spend a lot of time online, a lot of adults spend a lot of time online, but if they are spending increasing time online, if they're disconnecting from their friendship groups, things like that, because people, you know, adults or teenagers who groom children and teenagers, they want to try and disconnect you from the people who love and care about you, so because that makes you increasingly vulnerable. So if you see that person disconnecting a bit more, drifting away,
gravitating to their room with the tablet,
absolutely, and yeah, and even just little things, like if they've suddenly got a new best friend that nobody seems to know,
right,
you know, if they've suddenly got a confidant that is giving them all this advice. And a really big one is that, as much as we never want to think about it as parents, if something is already happening physically, mm-hmm. that you're unaware of, overly sexualized dressing behavior suddenly from your child, knowing things that they shouldn't know, vocabulary they shouldn't have, but again, becoming withdrawn, maybe covering up, you know, not wanting to be touched, all these, there could be it can be both ends of the spectrum, you know, very extreme, both ends of the spectrum. Yeah, but I think that if you are ever concerned, just say something. That's a big thing. Anybody who works in schools will know about GERFEC and medical, you know, keeping everybody, you know, it's everybody's job to keep children safe, and that goes down for us as well. And it's okay to be the first person to flag something and say, I'm not 100% sure about that. If you're a teacher, if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, if God, if you're anything at all, if you're the lollipop man or lady, if you're really going, something's not sitting right with me there, it was a tiny little thing, it's okay to say it.
Okay.
It's okay to go forward and maybe speak to the school and say, I maybe saw something, or I wasn't sure about that. It might come to absolutely nothing, and that's great if it does. You know, if it was just something and nothing, great. But if it's something bigger that's going on and you've been the first person, you could do a lot to save a child or a young person from getting in, you know, just, yeah, into further trauma. So,
great.
Yeah.
We've got time for one more question.
Go for it.
So a child's been bullying.
Mm-hmm.
You see the child has been bullied.
Yeah.
What's the advice? Do we approach the parent?
Ooh, good question.
Doing the bullying?
I think as a parent, it can probably be quite hard for a lot of parents to admit their child is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
That must be quite hard to sit and say, my child is a bully.
I would, if I had any feedback, I can hand on heart say I'd be investigating it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my kids would be in trouble.
I think it's down to, do you know the parents? If you know the parents and you think they're going to have that open conversation with you, and you can say, do you know what, there's something not right between our kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting on. I think they might be bullying. If you can have that open conversation, then you know those parents will go, well, hold, like you're saying, I'm going to investigate. Like, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's sit down about this. I'd say go for it. If you think that might not be the case, or maybe you don't know the parents, you know, approach your school. You know,
right.
If you can have that conversation with your school, maybe, I don't know how the school setup would be in your school, but, you know, speak to the guidance teacher, speak to your, you know, school teacher, speak to anybody in a position of trust that you do trust.
Yeah, that's the worrying thing, though, because at schools, you know, you would hope you could trust them.
You would hope.
But you think, oh, what if they're friends with a parent? Or,
yeah,
you know?
It's really hard. It's really, really tough. So I would say go to a person in position of trust if you feel like you can't talk to the parent.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's never a good idea to approach the child. That would be my advice. I wouldn't approach the child. I think that could cause a lot of animosity. Again, it's thinking about the shoe on the other foot. If some parents are suddenly approaching your child, you'd be a bit like, well, hold on. You know, what's going on there? This seems a bit much. So
depends on the age of the child as well.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think it's really tricky. But I think if there is obvious bullying going on, it's talking to people in a position of trust, because the reality is it can't continue.
Yeah.
And if it is let to continue, it probably will. And if a child is bullying, it's going back to what we said before about there's something underlying going on that they don't want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about helping your child not be bullied, it's also in part about helping that child who's bullying understand why they're bullying and what's going on for that child as well.
Yeah, why it's happening.
Why it's happening.
Because this is serious. People are committing suicide over.
Oh, massively, yeah.
I mean, this isn't just a topic. No, this is life-changing.
It's massive.
So it's something that we need to work harder to raise more awareness about. And yeah. I've actually learned loads from this conversation, so I'm really excited to share it.
From my nighttime breastfeeding research.
No, you've absolutely smashed it. And I could talk about it easily for another hour.
Oh, for sure.
But we can do more stuff. And I just thought that was really, really useful. So thank you
so much. But I think, if anybody does have any more questions, feel free to fire them over. We can definitely talk about it. And if you can, you can just text me and I can answer them via text, and you can pop them up if you want today or whenever this put on. Well, not today. See, Jojo, I don't live in the land of podcasts.
Yeah, I do batch a lot, but
yeah, when it goes up, if you want to have that day be a day where people can ask me questions and I can answer them on, you can answer them on your Instagram.
Oh, we could do like a live or something.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Lives,
what we could do is put the podcast in, and then we could have questions.
Absolutely, we can have questions. Yeah, to go for it, that'd be fine. So yeah, people get your questions ready if you would like.
Abby. Right. That's all right. Well, I've got a school run. You've probably got a baby.
I've got somebody to breastfeed.
Do you want to do a song for the road, or you don't really want to?
Jojo, we both know that I don't. I mean, Barry is the song master in our duo, and he's not here.
What song would you like me to sing later to end it?
Do you know what? What I've personally been finding very empowering recently is anything regarding to Beyonce or Destiny's Child.
Oh, love it.
So yeah. I would say something that's quite empowering, get something uplifting on. Uh-huh. Love a bit Beyonce.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Very anti-internalised misogyny there.
Perfect. Yeah. So
Beyonce,
should we be a bit more Beyonce?
We should be a bit more Beyonce.
She's no bully.
She's very inclusive. She's just like, get your stuff together and come with me.
Yeah.
And this massive dance routine in my video.
She's a great woman.
She's an amazing woman.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. And I mean, look how good she looked pregnant.
Oh.
I mean.
Hashtag well gel. And admitting it.
It's okay to be jealous of Beyonce pregnant.
Oh, it's fine. We're all wonderfully weird, guys. But let's be kind. That's what we can take from this.
Yes.
Kindness is so important in this day and age.
And kind to the pregnant lady who probably said something's wrong because she's very sleep. Not pregnant. Oh my God. Kind to the woman who's no longer pregnant but very sleep deprived. So
if anyone trolls, you're getting blocked. So.
But if I did say anything wrong, please correct me.
Yeah. You can. I don't think you did. I on and you give me loads to think about. But yeah, any trolling block, but any healthy debate, we welcome to.
Oh, definitely.
But we don't welcome bullying. So thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me back. Thank you.
And we'll keep everyone posted on where to find you and when your new website launches.
Yay, soon. Soon.
So we're very excited for that and all that you and Barry are doing. So loving it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ruth, you beauty. You are an angel, so I think we'll go with Halo. Barry, where are you when I need a duet partner? Come back soon, Barry. Maybe you can do a karaoke with you, Joa. Say no to bullying, y'all. Remember those walls up there? Well, baby, they're tumbling down. They didn't even put up a fight. They didn't even make a sound. I found a way to let you in, but I never really had a doubt. Standing in the light of your halo, got my angel now. It's like I've been awakened. You are, Ruth. You're a saving grace, full of great chat, great advice. You've opened up my eyes to love more. Halo, I can see your halo. I can see your halo. Halo. Ooh, yeah. Burning through my darkest night. I'm addicted to your life. I swore I'd never fall again, but this all don't even feel like falling. Gravity
to the ground again. It's like I've been awake, yeah. Every rule I had you break, yeah. It's the risk that I'm taking. I ain't never gonna shut you out. Right, I've kind of lost my voice. This is a very hard song to sing. So I'm sending all my love to you all, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you've sang along with me there. Mwah. Peace out.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.